Noon, a chance of snow, freezing rain and rain overnight, a low around 30. Rain and snow to begin the day tomorrow, becoming all rain. Afternoon, tomorrow's high 44, breezy. Expanded forecast, rain on Wednesday, dry for Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. Highs both days around 50. Right now, 32. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
Welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We have a really happy occasion today on the Morning Show. I am delighted to be reconnecting with an abundantly talented musician, originally from Racine, who now makes his home in the Twin Cities. And I know many of you know the name and know the talents of Zachary Scott Johnson. And Zach Johnson has been a very, very busy musician over the last few years, not only with the performing that he has done, but also with an exciting project that has been available to the public on YouTube, his Song A Day project. And today, if you go on YouTube, type in Zachary Scott Johnson, Song A Day, up will come episode number 3001, which means yesterday was the 3,000th episode of Song A Day. So 3,000 days in a row. And I think Zach Johnson did not realize what a sprawling legacy he was created when he got this project started. We've talked, I believe, on two previous occasions about Song A Day, but it was time to reconnect with Zach Johnson in honor of this really special anniversary. In the interest of full disclosure, we are actually recording this interview on Wednesday evening. I think that's the, 18th maybe of November.
Yep.
And so he's right around song 2,996 at this point. So as we are recording this, that monumental 3,000th segment of Song A Day is yet on the horizon. So Zach Johnson, we welcome you back to the Morning Show.
Thank you for having me. Wouldn't it be a bummer if I just decide not to do it tomorrow?
That would wreak still more havoc on this year, 2020. Please, let's have something we can depend on. That's great. At some point, I want to, for the sake of anybody who has not had the pleasure of knowing you, I want to do want to get a little of the backstory of your time here in Kenosha and so on. But actually, I want to start with your Song A Day project. So my wife and I and a friend were just trying to do some informal calculating about, if you're approaching your 3,000th segment, then what does that mean? How many years is that? I guess if we just do the math, we know. Can you tell us about the genesis of this?
Yeah, I started it in September of 2012. So it's been a little over 8 years, 8 years and 2 months or so. I started it when I had fairly recently moved to Arizona. My wife did a grad program in Tempe, Arizona. She was going to ASU. And when I first moved down, when we first moved down there, I was going there to be with her. I didn't have much going on my own at that point. I had not toured in that region a whole bunch. And so I was an unknown commodity, and I didn't really have very much lined up. I also didn't have any students lined up or anything like that. So I really had all this time. And I had this idea, a year or two before that, at gigs, people had started asking that question, can I buy your CD? Or what was starting to become more common as people were buying fewer and fewer CDs was, can I find your stuff online? Can I buy you on iTunes? The whole, like, I want to be digital and I don't want a CD thing. And, you know, if you see somebody at a bar or a, you know, club or a venue or whatever, and you want to buy their music, that's a wonderful thing. But, you know, you may forget about it the next day. And a lot of people did. Mm-hmm. And so my CD sales just tanked that year. And I was finding, I was talking to other musicians who were experiencing the same thing around that time, around 2010. And so I didn't have any sort of social media presence at all. I wasn't on YouTube. I wasn't on Spotify. I don't know if Spotify even existed at that point. But all these things, I wasn't on any of them. And I started thinking, well, you know, if I'm going to do something, I don't want to just put up a music video or go kind of the standard route that everybody was doing. It was just kind of more in my nature to try to think of something unique. And the only thing that I could think was, you know, I'm really used to doing these really long sets, these 4-hour gigs. And I tend not to take a break. And I thought, well, you know, maybe there's something to the idea of recording just every song I know, so that no matter what the song is, so, you know, if somebody says, where can I buy that song? I liked that one. Literally any song, I could say, yes, you can find that here. And so that was the genesis for the Song A Day project originally. And if I'm being completely honest, I thought at best it would last about a month. I really didn't think I would have it in me to keep it going. I just felt like it was kind of like, you know, everybody has started a blog or everybody has started a journal or a diary or something, and we all kind of give up on it. I'd done that too with other things. And so I just kind of didn't really think I would stick with it, but something inside me just kept going. And I think it had a lot to do with the circumstances of not having much else going on at that time. It was easy for me to do that. And it was a way to feel some sort of connection to a performing life that at that current time had just been diminished a little bit. So I think a good portion of it was just kind of getting over those first few hurdles. And I think if I had started it at another point in my life, it may not have gone this way.
Hmm. And I suppose you get to the point then where you can't imagine a day without it. I mean, a day yeah. doing this would feel really strange.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm. So we are coming up on the 3,000th segment. Has it been literally 3,000 days in a row, or have you put it together in a little bit different fashion than that? Or is that something you'd rather not reveal?
No, I talk about that all the time. I don't believe in trying to like be dodgy about any of it, really. I think so, as in, have I literally recorded a song every day the last 3,000?
Mm-hmm.
No, because the most days, yes. Like I did one today, I did one yesterday. You know, I do one most days for sure. But there are circumstances, this is all like pre-2020 stuff. It's all pre-COVID stuff.
Right.
But one of my absolutely the very favorite thing for me about the Song A Day project is getting to collaborate with other musicians.
Yeah.
Easily my favorite thing. And the format for that normally is if there's a musician who I like who happens to be playing in town, or if we're going to be in the same town for some other reason, I'll reach out to them. And there have been instances in which like two or three people have been in the same, you know, performing on the same day. So I'll go to one club and, you know, do a song with one person and another club with another person. And so then I have a built-in day off. And the first time and really the only time that I have like a big body of work was I went to a folk music conference, I think 3 years ago now, in Kansas City, at where there were just hundreds and hundreds of folk musicians in one hotel. And I was there for 4 days and I recorded 104 songs over those 4 days, which sounds kind of torturous. It was actually, I was so energized at the end of it. I feel like I could honestly do that once a month. It was fantastic. It was lovely. And so obviously by that I had like a third of a year built in. And so my process at first was I just put up one every 5 days. And then I started getting inquiries from people who were like, hey, it's been a year and you still haven't put up that song. And so I took a month. I took a month of January, again, I think 3 years ago, and just put up like 30 collaborations. And I took basically a month off. which was not something that I really needed to do. It was just, it had been too long that I had been sitting on all these collaborations and I needed to get them done. I would have been fine to continue what I do during that period of time. But so for the most part, yes, I do record a song every day. But there are a few instances in which it alters for one reason or another.
Right. Not so much about the next 5 days. Let's talk about, like a month ago or something. Mm-hmm. On a Monday, do you know what you're going to be singing on Friday? Or does it take shape much more spontaneously than that?
That's how I used to do it. It was really spontaneous, where I used to get up and it was limitless. And you are a very, you have a lot of wide-ranging tastes as well. The thing that I found difficult about that was more narrowing it down than it was finding something. It's never hard to find a piece of music to sing and to do. It's more kind of like narrowing it down. And so most of the time what I will do at this point is I will take somebody's entire record and I will do my versions of it over the course of 2 weeks or so. I do that a lot. I've done that now with, I think, 125 records. I actually do keep track of that. That's great because then I know what I'm doing for the next 2 weeks. And the only thing I'm kind of OCD about in my entire life really are things like this, where I'm like, you know what? I've done 8 Bob Dylan records so far. I'd love to get to them all, but if you don't keep track of it, you're going to miss something. And so like, that's something that I keep really careful track of. And I love the idea of the artists whose work I love really paying homage to them by really diving in and doing everything and not saying, you know what, that song I never really cared for. Sometimes you find something in those songs that you didn't think you liked when you're actually singing it or you're playing it. You find something in there, and it's always kind of interesting to do a song you don't think you're going to like either way, because you never know.
Yeah. I am trying to remember, I would assume over the course of this period, that you have repeated a song or two.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have a rough estimate of, in these 3,000 segments of Song a Day, how many different songs do you think we're talking about?
First, I would say I've probably repeated, I would guess, maybe 50 songs. Right now, what I'm doing, there's a really specific reason I'm doing this, actually. I'm re-recording a bunch of my own songs, because like original songs that I wrote. So about 2 years ago now, I started doing this multi-track thing. There are apps out there where you can, record yourself singing and playing a song, let's say on guitar, but then you can add a track of yourself playing violin or piano, or, you can add up to 9 tracks in the specific app that I use. And so the first 6 years of this, it was just, I had one shot. And so, it would just be me and a guitar or me and a piano, like most of the time. And so there are a few of these songs that I wrote that I thought would be kind of nice to have fleshed out a little bit. And so I'm re-recording a bunch of those, because my hope is that once I reach this 3,000th day, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a CD of some of the songs. I'm going to do, I think, 30 of the songs. I'm going to do a double disc set, and I don't know what it is with threes, but I'm going to do 30 songs from the 3,000 and put them on a 2 CD set. And so, but I want them to be original songs for the most part. And so some of these are ones that I think are better served in the multi-tracked version than the solo version.
For those of you just joining us, I am speaking today with Zachary Scott Johnson, one of the most talented musicians that I know, originally from Racine, now living in the Twin Cities. And what we're talking about today is the landmark 3,000th segment of his Song a Day project, which is shared with the public on YouTube. Began in the fall of, did you say, 2012?
Yep.
And yesterday was segment number 3,000. So today is 3001. And we're talking with Zachary Scott Johnson about this experience of creating this Song a Day project. For the sake of listeners who don't know who you are, mm-hmm. or maybe aren't acquainted with you on kind of a personal level, just give them a quick summary of your musical life here in Racine, and the kind of things that you did early on that have helped shape you into this multifaceted musician that you are now.
I grew up in Racine, Wisconsin. I'm so lucky to have grown up in Racine, Wisconsin for a lot of reasons. Probably the primary thing that changed, you know, my trajectory and, you know, at a very young age is I went to Fine Arts Elementary School. And that it was such an incredible thing for a young child to have. I mean, just having that exposure to music, to drama, to dance, to all of these different avenues that, you know, I don't think everybody has. What a nice, amazing opportunity that is. And to have teachers like Charlene Melzer, who was extraordinary, teaching you how to play the violin. So anyway, I started playing violin when I was in first grade there, so 6 or 7, and started taking piano lessons roughly the same time. My parents are big music lovers. I have 3 siblings and we all took multiple music instruments. Like, they're really, really big and, you know, supporting us in the arts and supporting just trying things and seeing what stuck. And So I had Greg Berg as a voice teacher when I was in high school. That was a big deal. I studied with some just wonderful musicians. And after high school, I went to Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin. And I was a triple major with theater arts, violin performance, and psychology, which I don't really recommend to people. It was a little too much. Drop one of them. But and since then, after that, right after that, I did a 6-month national tour with a bilingual musical of all things. We went across the country and played this kind of funky little show where we were half of the time in Spanish and half the time in English. And it was kind of wild. And, you know, we got to see the entire country, which was fantastic. And then I came back to Racine after that and taught for 1.5 years at the Prairie School, which I loved. And then I moved to Minnesota. It was time to see what the world had to offer. And the other thing that I should mention too, because we both have strong connections to it, independent of all of these things, was in acting, a love of acting that was primarily came about through working with the Racine Theater Guild and the 6th Street Theater in Racine, Wisconsin. Both of those places were wonderfully good experiences for me. I'm not articulating it particularly well, but they've shaped me in ways that I still appreciate to this day.
You have been a very busy professional musician since moving away from Racine, and even before you moved away, you were already forging lots of connections and creating a wonderfully rich performance life for yourself. Ahead of COVID, which of course shut so many things down, not just for Zachary Johnson, but for musicians all over the world. But ahead of COVID, describe sort of the musical life that you've been enjoying over the last few years and the kind of performing that you've been doing in what sort of venues and what sorts of settings.
Sure. I have been a gigger for the last 15 years. I mean, like, became at some point what they call in the folk music world something of a road warrior, which is just somebody who's out there either kind of constantly or in my case mostly weekends, and never really having a weekend when I wasn't working. I'm sure you Greg know all about this. You do this too. I've been playing about 100 gigs a year for about 15 years. And this year, obviously, things are different. I just looked back the other day at my calendar. I was trying to think of how many gigs I'd actually done this year, just for a point of reference. And I was surprised because it was about 25, which is more than I thought that I had done. But I did a bunch before kind of COVID shut us down. January and February this year were a little busier than usual. And so things have really changed, but you know, we're happy, we're healthy. It's just kind of taking on a different format. I really do worry about things kind of going back to what they used to be. I worry about what kind of the long-term crawling back to normalcy that exists in the world that I've forged, but we'll see. I play a real variety of places. I just kind of started to find my usual places where I was returning, you know, once a month and playing. A lot of wineries, a lot of, I try not to book too many bars anymore. I think I'm just getting too old for bars. And wineries are still good fun. And I don't really play any coffee shops anymore, but, you know, some small theaters and some, you know, it sort of depends upon the package that's being put together. I spend a lot of time opening for other artists in bigger venues, which is always a pleasure. I mean, that's usually a pretty easy gig. You get to get in front of somebody else's usually larger audience and play a shorter set and, you know, do only the best stuff that you've got and get out, which is a good gig for me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and trying to forge into new markets all of the time and try to play places that you haven't been before and just kind of keep building. Folk music is a real grassroots thing. You know, it's one connection at a time.
Right. And I assume that in the days when you were a very busy performer, that you were performing far and wide, not just within the friendly confines of the Twin Cities where you now live.
Yeah, for sure. I tour to, I have focused more on the Midwest in the last couple of years, just because the traveling has not worn on me a little bit, especially now. There's kind of nothing I would love to be doing more right now. It feels funny to think back on a period of time, even a year ago, when I felt like it was starting to become a burden to travel, and now it's really appealing again. But there has been this thing of kind of pushing it a little bit further, a little bit further out. But a lot of those big markets I play with regularity, you know, New York and Nashville and Los Angeles and certainly Chicago and other places too, where you have to get out and play those markets and see who your audience is. That's one of the things with YouTube is I don't always see my audience, you know, except at shows. The people who comment and the people who watch the videos, I don't always hear from them. And so you got to go out there and see who they are.
So your Song a Day project, and again, we're celebrating your 3000th segment, 3000 days in a row. What's your sense of who is watching that faithfully on a very, very regular basis? And I forget the way YouTube operates. I guess you do have some sense, some numerical sense of at least how many views there are. And so I suppose roughly how many people are out there watching. But do you have much of a sense of who these people are and how they have found you? I mean, is it possible for people to stumble on the Song a Day project completely by accident, or in more cases, more often than not, is it because either they know you or know of you or have had reason to seek you out?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think what it is again, because I do a lot of covers of other people's work, you know, it's there's something in the algorithms that if you're watching, let's say, a Joni Mitchell song, and I've done a cover of that same one, they might see me in the sidebar, and sometimes people click on that. People click on different versions of things, and they'll search for a song and find, you know, not the original version that they know. They'll go exploring a little bit. I think that's actually a bigger percentage. There are analytics for YouTube, and there are ways for me to see a little bit more closely who's watching. To tell you, I don't mean to sound like I don't care about these things, but I actually tend not to look too closely at that, because I don't think the information that I find has been particularly helpful, in the sense, it's all sometimes meaningless. It leads to more questions and not very many answers. And so I tend not to look too closely, but you know, for the first few years, I always used to put my email address in every video, like it as part of it, so that people could send in requests. And I feel like things were more, there was a lot more back and forth back then. And a couple of years ago, they changed some of their settings, and that's no longer an option. And so people can still get in touch, you know, just by leaving a comment on a video or something. I always see those, but it's harder to have a little bit of back and forth with people unless it's really somebody who seeks you out and then, you know, goes to your website and then sends an email through that or something. So it's, you know, there's a little bit less of a kind of give and take compared to what it used to be when I first started, which is kind of too bad.
Yeah. Tell us how it has felt to do this since the ugly curtain of COVID descended back in the spring. I mean, around here it was in the middle of March that life, I was going to say, slowed to a crawl. It kind of ground to a sudden halt in some respects. So for you, first of all, I should think that was such a strange sensation to sort of know that this awful thing was coming and to have at least a general sense of what its ramifications were going to be for you professionally. And yet that's not like you was an oncoming train. You could get out of the way. I mean, it was, right. It was going to hit no matter what. So in the wake of the onset of this pandemic and all the restrictions on all of our lives, what has this Song A Day project meant to you? I mean, has it felt different or taken on maybe new or additional meaning because of this?
I think in a way it has. The biggest change, and I spoke to this a minute ago, was the collaborative thing and the real lack of collaboration. That is a huge part of the Song A Day project. It's something that I spend a lot of time coordinating with other people and checking in with other people, and even just monitoring to see who's coming through town. That takes time and energy to do that. And not being able to do that, not being able to play with other people, I mean, you know, not even being able to see other people has been a really rough thing. Within the scale of, again, I don't mean to sound, there are a lot of people who've died. There's a lot of people who've lost one. So I don't mean to sound complaining that I didn't get this privilege of playing with other people that I probably will have, you know, a few months from now. I recognize all of that. But, you know, just from a standpoint of really what this year has done is it slowed things down, and it forced me to kind of just do it all myself. And just it just felt maybe a little bit more like a grind this year than it previously has. Not overwhelmingly so, and not in a particularly negative way. It's just, it feels like it's taking up a different block of time in a weird way. In a time in which time is kind of lost meaning, it's all of a sudden, you know, a bigger part of what I do each day. But, you know, it's a way to have some normalcy, and it's a way to stick it out and, you know, keep going. That was one of the things that I personally have feared. We all fear getting COVID, I think. And, you know, that was certainly one of my concerns, as naive as it sounds, because again, it's bigger than the Song A Day project. Obviously it's bigger than me. It's bigger than all of us. But that idea of, boy, I hope COVID isn't the thing that stops the Song A Day project. Mm,
right. I can understand. You mentioned that you are unable to do collaborations the way you once did, not only in your own life, but of course also in the Song A Day project. But I can think of at least one occasion fairly recently in which you collaborated with, I think, a young woman from New York City on a Joni Mitchell song.
Right.
It was a case, I think, of someone who just reached out to you, someone who was a complete stranger to you. Tell our listeners about this, assuming that you remember who I'm talking about.
I do. Yes, that's Rose, Rose Stoller. She lives in New York City. She's a fantastic jazz vocalist. This app that I use, which I may as well, I mean, I'm not endorsed by them or anything, but I'll say the name. The app is called Acapella. And it's an app in which, again, you're able to multi-track. You're able to lay down one part and then lay something down on top of that. And one of the other things that you can do is you can collaborate with other people who have this app. And I think that's the caveat, is it's harder for me to justify reaching out to people and saying, can we collaborate, but also will you buy this app that has a monthly fee attached to it? Not everybody's willing to say yes to that. So Rose found some of my songs on the app, actually not on YouTube. She found them on the app because the app posts everything that you do as well. And so she found some Joni Mitchell songs that I had done and said, I wanted to do something with you. I love Joni, and let's do something, you know, let's collaborate. And honestly, collaborating through the app, for people who don't you know, who might not expect this, is super easy. I mean, it's really shockingly easy, because you can just, you know, in that case with Rose, I recorded a piano part, sent it to her. She sang and sent it back to me, and I added a violin part to it. I think we did that entire thing in less than an hour. And, you know, I mean, if you think of how kind of amazing that is to send a video of yourself to somebody in New York City across the country, and they send it back to you 20 minutes later with their thing added to it, that's amazing. I mean, what a wonderful, amazing time we live in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just to explain to people, if you go on YouTube and watch this episode, which happens to be number 2800, you see three different picture panels on the screen, and two of them are Zach, and one of them is this Rose Stoller from New York City, and they are making music together. On the other hand, there are all these other instances in which we see 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different windows, and in all of them is Zachary Scott Johnson doing something different. In one frame, it's you singing. In another, it's you playing the piano. I can remember one song, at least I saw, where there's three different frames of you playing the violin, but it's you playing the three different violin parts in addition to all of the other layers. And you get to create these beautiful layered performances. And then sometimes it's just plain old Zach Johnson playing the guitar. But what typically prompts you to want to create something that is of that more kind of elaborate nature with all those different layers?
That's the toughest question, really. I mean, you are a brilliant arranger of other people's music and your own music, so I'm sure you understand that. I think it's just a natural, you just get a sense of a song. Sometimes, you know, you always start with, or I always start with, I should say, you know, stripping it down to its bare essentials, you know, just guitar and the song, or just piano and guitar, or just piano and voice. And thinking, is there anything that would add something? I have a problem sometimes, which is over adding things and kind of getting in my own way a little bit. But I think there are instances in which, hopefully, I try to be more and more tasteful the older I get with the additional instruments being added. But that is something I struggle with. That's one of my bigger struggles as a musician, I think, is oversaturating the music, I guess. But you just kind of hear things and you just kind of sense what the song needs. And one of the things that, again, I think is probably, I would expect would be a surprise to most people, is if I'm covering somebody else's song, I don't spend a lot of time with the original. I don't spend a lot of time listening to it, because you get too influenced that way, and you just replicate instead of, I think a cover should honor the song, the original, but should have a new point of view, a different perspective, because the question I always ask is, why am I listening to you sing this instead of the original? And I ask that of myself and other people. And I think that is an important question. So you can't just replicate it and do it in exactly the same format. You've got to add something to it that's different. And that can come in a variety of formats. That can become from adding something to it. It can also do the exact opposite and taking a complicated song and stripping it down to its nuts and bolts. You know, a song that has a great groove to it, maybe also has fantastic lyrics that people aren't really listening to because the groove is there, or again, vice versa. There may be something in there, you know, musically that you can bring out in the song that is very simple, that you can add something to it, layers and dimensions. So.
I know that early on you were sampling an album that I'd never heard of, but it's actually one I really hope that I can seek out. I think the title of the album is Obscenely Optimistic Songs for Ukulele.
Yeah, by Jeremy.
And I seem to recall that one of your introductions, maybe from the first time you sang one of the songs from that album, was that, you know, basically made reference to kind of the dark clouds of COVID that were about to, or had already kind of engulfed us. And so this seemed to, as far as you were concerned, like a nice way to sort of take a step towards the light by playing some of this. And the song I think I like the most is a song called Everybody Gets a Kitten.
Yeah.
But I wonder if you could just talk about this album and what it meant for you at the time as you were sharing these particular songs.
Yeah, there's a wonderful, he's also based here in the Twin Cities, another artist named Jeremy Messersmith, and these are his songs. He put out this record. I think he only put it out on digital formats. I'm not sure you can buy the CD. I think it's only streaming. I could be wrong, but Jeremy was actually the guest for my 1,000th day back in the day. He was a guest back then. And so he put out this record that was just him and a ukulele, and he just needed a little joy at that time in his life. And he wrote these very happy, very optimistic, I mean, it's called the Obscenely Optimistic Songs for Ukulele. And the brilliant thing that he did, I think really brilliant thing, is he put the songbook on his website so that anybody could just download it. You can just go to his website and download these pages with the song. And if I remember correctly, I think he actually put out the songbook before he put out his versions of the songs, in the hope that other people, he has a very good following. And I think he had this hope that other people would sing these songs, which is true. A lot of these songs have a lot of versions out there. And it would just bring some joy to the world. And this was pre-COVID. This was a couple of years before COVID. And, you know, the early days of COVID, it seems so quaint now, but we didn't know how long this was going to last in March. Right. We didn't know if we were locked down for a week. We didn't know if we were locked down for a month. We had no idea. I think if you had told most of us that, you know, almost a year later, we would still be worrying about this, and, you know, that nearly a quarter of a million people in this country alone would be dead from it, I think people would be really surprised in March to learn that information. So we didn't know, but it felt like something serious, and it felt like something scary, and it felt like something totally, I never foresaw this happening in my lifetime. And it felt like, you know what, the time is right to sing something upbeat. The time is right to sing something that's going to alleviate, you know, a little bit of that stress. They're all kind of these very sweet, very innocent songs. And it's maybe a bit on the naive side, but, you know, the folks who are watching, if I can brighten their day for 2 minutes and then they go back to thinking about COVID, that's a couple minutes I'm glad, you know, is in their day.
I think it worked perfectly. I think it's one of the best of many wonderful chapters in your long Song a Day project. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Zachary Scott Johnson, Racine's own, but he lives in the Twin Cities. And yesterday, Sunday, he recorded and shared with the world his 3,000th segment of his Song a Day project on YouTube. I know one of the things, you've touched on this already, is that you not only enjoy singing your own songs, but you also have been doing a lot of work in which you sing all of the songs off of a given album. And I've noticed one pattern is that in many cases, you're doing all of the songs off of a famous singer's first album. So the very first album of Bruce Springsteen, for instance, the very first album of Annie Lennox, the very first album of Elton John. Is there any particular reason why you're drawn to the first album of some of these artists?
It's a two-prong answer, but actually I'll be less long-winded about this because it's more succinct. The first is that there's always something in the beginning. There's always something interesting about the kind of first, that people are changed over time for the good and the bad. And hearing kind of what somebody's coming out of the gate with is always interesting to me. And the other is, I'm a completionist in the sense, it's kind of what I was talking about earlier with the Bob Dylan thing. With all of those artists that you mentioned, I want to sing all of their songs. I know I won't probably get to all of these artists, every song they ever sung. I mean, I think it's in certain ways probably too much to take on. But, you know, I love the idea of singing every Bruce Springsteen song. For me, it's easiest to figure out how to do that if I start at the beginning and go chronologically. Same with Annie Lennox, who I love, and Elton John, and all these other artists, too. It's mostly a chronological thing.
I wanted to ask you about a specific song that really struck me as interesting, in part because of something you said in the introduction. And this is a song called With a Hand on Her Shoulder. You apparently, if I remember correctly, you composed this as part of some day-long event that you were part of that I think might have involved songwriting, maybe like a songwriting workshop of some kind. Tell us about that, and tell us about this particular song.
Sure, yeah. That came out of, it was on Zoom, as everything is, although it was originally scheduled to be in person. There's a wonderful singer-songwriter named Dara Williams. I've been a fan of hers for over a decade. Love her. And she was doing a songwriting workshop at the Old Town School of Folk Music, which is in Chicago. And our mutual friend Mark Paffrath and I had been booked for a gig in Racine. It was that, I think it's called Music at the Monument series. And this was in July, and we had been booked, you know, I think on a Friday maybe. And Dar's thing was in Chicago on Thursday. And so I thought, this is perfect timing. You know, I'm going to be in Racine, it's close to Chicago. I'm going to go do this workshop. And then it ended up being moved to online, but we still did it. It was, I don't know, maybe a dozen or so of us who did this just day-long intensive where we just kind of shared thoughts. And Dar gave us a few writing prompts. So what writing prompts are, for anybody who doesn't know, is somebody else gives you an idea, or sometimes what Dar did actually was give us titles. And we had to write a song, you know, we had an hour break and we had to write a song with that title and come back with it. And she gave us three options. I wrote them all down, but I don't remember what the other two were. But the least interesting to me in the moment was With a Hand on, I don't think it was her shoulder. I think it was With a Hand on the Shoulder or something. There was no gender assigned to it. And I was initially kind of thought, okay, well, that's a generic love song waiting to happen. I've written enough of those. I wasn't interested in that. And for some reason, oh, I know what it was. I went to go get a COVID test during this hour. I had kind of told her I have to run out because I have this COVID test during this hour break. And so on that drive, I found myself thinking about, you know, just how strange. I thought, you know, I'm doing this thing that I was supposed to do in person and I'm supposed to be writing a song and I'm going to get a COVID test. And this is just weird. This is really strange. And I started thinking a little bit about my niece, one of my nieces, of which I have four, and thinking about how I was struggling to understand what was going on. And I just couldn't imagine what it would be like to explain this thing that we're all going through to a child. And that was kind of the impetus.
Someone's at the front door.
Sorry, my thing has gone off here. So that was kind of the thing that put the idea in my head of maybe With a Hand on Her Shoulder is not a romantic song at all. Maybe it's guiding a child through this. And so that's what I did with that song, is just try to explain. I mean, it was multi-layered, because one of the things that I couldn't get over was how politicized COVID was, in particular at that. I mean, it still is, but and how upset I was that it was being politicized in this way, that it was being made to be this thing that if you wore a mask, you were, you know, you were a wimp. And if you didn't, you were a strong, you know, it was just, it was so disrespectful to people who had passed away. And it was so kind of, it was so selfish, and it was so, it was just driving me crazy that there was this national attitude of right and wrong over this thing that had just killed so many people. It's not a right and wrong. Like, we need to do, we need to just do this together. And I it really just broke me that we still can't seem to do that. And so a lot of that came out in that song. And I was talking at points about specific things about my niece, and at other times just kind of broader sense things of what was happening in the country.
It's really, really powerful. It's one of my very, very favorite moments among some of your recent efforts. So we are recording this on Wednesday. You've just shared 2996, a nice song, I think, called Cherry Cola Clouds. So do you have the next several days mapped out, which by the time this interview airs will have all been shared on YouTube, including segment number 3000?
Yeah, I have the next 4 days figured out. I have three more original songs that I'm going to re-record, which did kind of, it timed out perfectly to land, you know, at 2999 to kind of finish up these songs that I wanted to do. And then for day 3000, I'm going to record, I wasn't sure what I was going to do for a long time. And then I had always been hoping it would be a collaboration, you know, that it would be a, that's what I've always done with big days in the past, is do a collaboration with somebody. And that's what I was hoping for, but with COVID, it wasn't going to be that way. And I have ended most of my concerts with a song by Billy Joe Shaver, a Texas singer-songwriter called Live Forever. And it's an interesting song because it's, again, very positive, very kind of, you know, just upbeat. And when I started, I didn't hear it originally from Billy Joe. I heard it from somebody else, and I just kind of heard the song and went, ooh, I'm going to learn that one. And I started playing it around, and then other musicians would go, you got to teach me that song. And, you know, when that happens, there's something special going on.
That's the best compliment you can possibly get.
Yeah, especially, you know, if it's somebody else's song, you know, you're just kind of passing it on to everybody. And so I've passed it on to a lot of folks, and I think it's probably the song I get requested to do the most at this point. And I haven't really done a proper version of it on the Song of Day Project. My thought was maybe that I would be the last song that I do for the Song of Day Project. And 3000 will not be the end. I'm going to keep going. But it felt like maybe the time was right because Billy Joe passed away just within this last month. And he did not pass away from COVID, but it felt like maybe the time was right to sing the song because of that. I had the opportunity to open for him a few times, and he was kind of not what I, he was not as prescribed. He had kind of, he was this Texas outlaw. The stories about him were kind of wild and crazy. He had like shot a guy in the back. He had done like all these crazy things in his life. And when I met him, he was the most like loving and joyful. I think he hugged everybody in his audience. He looked me in the eye and said, I love you. You know, he was just not what I expected at all.
Wow.
And so it just felt like maybe this was the song. Maybe the time was right to do that. So that's what my plan is to sing that song that I've sung a million times. But, you know, hopefully we'll do something a little special for it on day 3000. That's a hope.
Well, this whole project has been such a labor of love for you. And for those of us that admire you and care about you, it's been a wonderful way to kind of keep track of you and to stay connected with you and to enjoy all of the marvelous explorations of your wide-ranging talents. And so for people who have not ever sought it out before, I recommend that you go to YouTube right now, type into the search bar, Zachary Scott Johnson, Song a Day, and thousands of songs await you and all kinds of hours of listening pleasure. Zach Johnson, it's been great to reconnect with you. Best wishes to you. We hope you'll get to be on the road again sometime soon. But in the meantime, thank you for all the music making that you're continuing to do. And best wishes to you.
Thanks, Greg. And they should look up the one we did together.
There you go.
Thank you.
And here are the closing moments of Zachary Scott Johnson's 3,000th segment of the Song A Day Project. And it is indeed the song Live Forever by Billy Joe Shaver and Eddie Shaver.
I'm gonna live forever. I'm gonna cross that river. I'm gonna catch tomorrow night. I'm gonna live forever. I'm gonna cross that river. I'm gonna catch tomorrow night. I'm gonna live forever. I'm gonna cross that river. I'm gonna catch tomorrow night.
See you tomorrow.
Tomorrow on the morning show, two different authors. Part one is Ted Yang, the author of Table for Five, A Father's Story of Love, Life, and Loss. It tells the story of how he and his wife enjoyed having three triplets come into their life, only to have one of them lose their life just a couple of days later. The story of how to come back from that loss is this.